Let's wait till the courtroom clears.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. There are two independent reasons why the district court's judgment below should be reversed. First, the district court improperly relieved the SBA from the EEOC's final decision reinstating Mr. America's underlying Title VII race discrimination and retaliation claims. Second, taking the facts as the district court found them, Mr. America established a material breach, and the district court erred in finding to the contrary. With respect to the first argument, as we explained in our initial brief, the EEOC is the top cop when it comes to federal employment discrimination retaliation claims. Their orders are binding on federal agencies. And so the only question really is whether or not the EEOC issued a final order reinstating Mr. America's complaint. And they did. And as a matter of fact, the SBA in its brief at page 28 refers to the order of reinstatement as an order of the EEOC. The SBA then had 30 days after the Office of Federal Operations issued that order to seek reconsideration. They didn't. The 30 days lapsed, and that order became final and binding. Mr. America relied upon that order in then proceeding to district court. He complied fully with the EEOC's instruction that he return to the status quo ante by scrounging up the total $90,000 settlement payment and returning it to the SBA. And at that point, he had perfected the ability to return to district court. And the district court erred by treating that as an open issue in when Mr. America was in federal court. So that decision was binding. Now, the SBA doesn't really take issue with that in its brief. What they argue is that under the Administrative Procedures Act, there are situations where agency determinations can be rescinded. And they argue the standard that as long as an agency does that within a reasonable period of time, an agency is free to rescind. That may be true under the Administrative Procedures Act, but it is not true under Title VII. Title VII has a very clearly defined regulatory process where only the aggrieved employee can seek de novo review in federal court if dissatisfied with the decision below. And Mr. America from the EEOC had received everything that he asked for on the breach claim. He asked that his underlying claims be reinstated. They were, and that should have ended the matter. Now, with respect to the second issue in the case.
Was he prejudiced in any way by the SBA's withdrawal of its concession?
Well, he was prejudiced, Your Honor. First of all, he complied.
Other than the claim not being reinstated, but beyond that, was there any prejudice?
Well, yes, Your Honor, because he relied upon the agency's finding of breach and the EEOC's affirmation of the breach by then making the election to pursue his underlying claims in federal court on the race discrimination and retaliation claims. He incurred costs in proceeding with those claims, and he returned to the agency, although they didn't accept it, the $90,000 in the settlement. So he was prejudiced because he made a decision to then pursue the underlying termination claims in court, having been told that that was his right to do so, both by the agency and by the EEOC. So he certainly was prejudiced by permitting the SBA to then renege on that finding.
But I thought he filed his action before the SBA said, we're not reinstating your complaint because this was not a bona fide prospective employer.
That's right, Judge Henderson.
So he's both filing an action in federal court and also without knowledge that they're going to retract this, thinking that he's going to go back to the first step on his administrative complaint.
No, Judge Henderson.
All right.
When he was told first by the agency and then by the EEOC that his complaint had been reinstated, that in fact the SBA had breached the settlement agreement, then at that point he had the ability to go to federal court, and he did. He did that after the agency allowed the 30-day reconsideration period on the breach claim to expire. So at that point, he rightly believed that
he abandoned the administrator.
Right. He rightly believed that the breach issue was done, that issue was behind him, and now the only issue was convincing judge or jury on his underlying Title VII race discrimination or retaliation claims.
But, I mean, he abandoned because the EEOC meant, I thought, by status quo ante, it was going back to the SBA and then through the different levels until perhaps it came back up to the EEOC.
No, Your Honor. What it meant is that he was returned to the exact position he was in the day before he signed the settlement agreement. And that position was that his administrative complaints had been pending for greater than 180 days, and he had the right to go to federal court. And in fact, the EEOC's order instructed him that he had the right to file in federal court, and he did. It was only after their appeal period expired, after he filed in court, that they come in and they say, well, we don't like the decision that we had made below, and we don't like the decision that the EEOC rendered in this case, and asked the district court for the opportunity to revisit it. And they cited APA case law for that, and the district court agreed and said, we will revisit the breach issue, and held the trial on the breach issue. That was error. There is no doubt, and I don't believe the agency has cited to any authority to the contrary, that Section 717 of Title VII does not bind the federal agencies with respect to a final order. And they agree that the EEOC issued an order, and the order granted Mr. America everything he asked for on the breach claim. That issue should have been settled the first day of Mr. America's underlying complaint in the district court, and the only issue should have been his discrimination or retaliation claims. Now, we believe that by itself is enough to reverse the district court's decision. But on the merits, we believe the judge also erred because the judge found that two agency managers referred specifically to the information that the settlement agreement had targeted as confidential and not to be disclosed. And as we explained, both the Federal Circuit and the MSPB have consistently held that when an agency agrees to non-disclosure of particular historical information for an employee's personnel file, that the disclosure is itself a material breach. The employee is not required to somehow prove some other type of harm. I see that my time is expiring. I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you. Mr. Birch.
May it please the court. With respect to the issue of authority to withdraw the opinion, the simple fact of the matter is the SBA did comply with the EEOC's order. The SBA's original position was, we will reopen the case if you repay the money. Mr. America said, I don't want to repay the money. That's why he appealed to the EEOC. The EEOC's decision was, restore the status quo ante, including repaying the money, fully vindicating the SBA's original position about repaying the money as part of restoring the status quo ante. There was no difference between what the EEOC's position or resolution was and the agency's original position. This was not a case of them violating the order. With respect to whether it's the EEOC is the top cop, in the civil structure set up by this Title VII, the courts are, of course, the top cop, and the EEOC's regulations are explicit that the rule is that the orders are binding as long as they're not the subject of a district court action. So as soon as he goes to district court, it's no longer binding. There's a third reason as well, in that the regulations also provide for a remedy if he thought at any time after the EEOC's decision that the SBA was not complying with the order. The remedy is two steps. You go back to the EEOC and you say the agency's not complying with the order. If the EEOC agrees, the EEOC issues a subsequent decision that gives him a right to go to federal court to get an order from the court saying comply with the EEOC's order. At no time did Mr. America go back to the administrator process or the district court and say the EEOC has not complied with the order. It came later. It wasn't in his complaint, and he never went back to the EEOC. So there are at least three reasons why the agency fully complied with the order. Moreover, he's also wrong about the reconsideration. Simply because the 30 days have passed, the EEOC could have gone back to the EEOC and sought reconsideration. It would have had to make an argument of equitable tolling. But indeed, the argument for equitable tolling is fairly clear here. He hadn't repaid the money. If he refused to repay the money at the beginning, it's certainly a reasonable position for the agency to have taken that he would continue to refuse the money. He certainly had that option. Even after the EEOC issued its decision, he could have said, I'm going to keep the $92,000 and leave it at that. So this whole issue of the agency not complying with the order, there are at least four reasons why that it's just simply a non-starter. Now, with respect to the merits of the case, there shouldn't be any question about the legal standard. The district court held, and we think properly, and as I read Mr. America's briefs, he agrees, in order to show material breach on his theory of the case, applying the standards of the case law, he needed to show two things: non-neutral comments and a prejudice to his job search. Now, we read prejudice to job search to mean his actual job search. And this is where the district court's decision simply cannot be reversed, because there is nothing connecting any of the comments allegedly made to any actual employer. Indeed, if you compare this case to Greenhill or Thomas, the fact patterns were involving a neutral reference position, you'll see plaintiffs who use discovery to show what the employer they were trying to get a job at thought of them and the impact of the comments, the breaching comments. Mr. America made no attempt, either in discovery or at trial, to introduce evidence of any actual employer hearing any of these comments. Indeed, he was quite consistent on every single actual employer that came up in trial. He didn't give them any SBA references. He had no information that any of them tried to contact the SBA. He had no information that the SBA ever reached out to any of these employers. There is simply a gaping hole between anything the SBA said or did and any bona fide prospective employers. Indeed, as a thought experiment, you could imagine the SBA saying to DRC, just unleashing a tirade of invective with profanity about how much they couldn't stand Mr. America. It would not have prejudiced his actual job search in any way at all. And he had no evidence to show that. That's the big picture here. The district court quite generously put that aside and said, well, I'm going to find that the comments weren't negative because he hasn't even shown me that they were actually made with sufficient detail for me to determine that they were negative. Now, you need to have a fair amount of detail to know what a negative comment is, because it's a fairly contextual analysis as to what kind of comments would be negative. He has a particular kind of job he's looking for. He has a particular set of qualifications. The district court found that because of the complete lack of credibility of Michael Rankin and the DRC process, that he could not rely on the wording of the reports. He found that they conversations must have happened, but he couldn't say what they were. He thought that, as narrowed down in the reply brief, there were two comments, one by Ms. Rushi and one by Mr. Rosenthal, that related to his transfer and that he didn't report. But that's as specific as the district court could find. Now, if we are to take Mr. America at his word that he does not challenge the factual findings of the district court, that's a pretty broad area of uncertainty about what was said. And certainly that is pretty thin grounds to reverse the district court's finding on whether this would impact his job search, even if it had been shown to a real employer.
Let me ask you about the last paragraph of the conclusions of law, where the judge says, finally, even if one were to conclude that Rosenthal's statements would have had a negative impact on a potential employer and therefore amounted to a material breach, that conclusion would turn on a few words that he is reported to have said and not on the general tenor of the whole conversation. District judge then, the way I read it, says what I do think, or what there is evidence of what is said, was not negative enough.
Right.
But then he says at the end of that paragraph that plaintiff simply has not shown by a preponderance of the evidence that such an inaccuracy did not occur. And I have a problem figuring out why that's even in there. If the judge thought that anything that he thought was said was not negative enough, then why did he even say the plaintiff failed in his burden to show that any inaccuracies did not occur?
I tried to unpack that in my brief. I guess I didn't do a good enough job. I see it as an alternative holding that, A, if the comments were made, they weren't negative enough, but, B, I can't even find that the comments were made reliably enough to know what they were. It's not quite saying they weren't made, but it is saying he hasn't proven them enough so that I could actually latch on to particular words. But even if they were made, they weren't negative enough. And so the district court, I think, is finding, you know, that they simply weren't negative enough to the extent that they were proved, which is not very much. Now, I say that, as I was explaining earlier, I think that's sort of deeper into the weeds than the district court needed to get because of this complete failure to connect it to any actual job search. Now, which relates back to our argument.
We don't need to get to that theory if we affirm the district court on one of these two alternatives that you find in this paragraph.
That's right. Exactly. If there are no further questions, we would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Salzman has
1 minute remaining.
All right. Why don't you take two?
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the first issue, the last question that you were asking about what the district court's findings were, it's clear on page 37 of the appendix that the district court found that at least some of the reported conversations had to have occurred, and then he includes in that the statements about the circumstances surrounding Mr. America's proposed transfer to Kansas City, the fact that he did not report there, and the internal battle over Mr. America's proposed transfer. And as we said in the reply brief, those are the statements that we are relying on. There's no doubt that the district court found that those statements occurred. There's no doubt from the settlement agreement that the disputed transfer to Kansas City, which led to Mr. America's removal and his AWOL, was to be kept confidential.
He goes on in what you just read to say, in view of the testimony, the court cannot find by preponderance the evidence that either report is a totally accurate transcription of phone calls.
I think that's right, Judge Kavanaugh. And what I think he was referring
to is a problem for your theory hearing.
Well, I don't think it is, but here's why. I think what he was referring to is there were lots of other negative comments in the conversations. Things like, he may not be the guy to take it to the next level, maybe people didn't get along with him the same way that I did. That we think what the district court was saying is that with respect to those comments, changing one word or any inaccuracy in those comments could change the meaning of what was said. And because he had significant concerns about Mr. Rankin's credibility, he couldn't accurately or comfortably believe that those statements were as written in the report, distinguishing that from the comments about the transfer to Kansas City, which we argue were by themselves sufficiently negative and were targeted by the settlement agreement for non-disclosure. And therefore, under Thomas and the Federal Circuit's decision in Thomas and the consistent line of MSPB cases that says that if an agency does disclose information that they bargained to keep confidential, that is a material breach. That should have been enough. But getting
how about Rosenthal? Does the district judge, I forget, say that Rosenthal, when he was asked, would you hire him again, he said yes for the right job. Did he find that he said that? I just don't remember.
I don't believe he made any specific finding with respect to that, Judge Henderson, and I think what Mr. Rosenthal said was, is he eligible for rehire? I don't know, was his answer. But I don't believe the district court addressed that specifically in his findings. We're not arguing that that was among the comments that the district court found absolutely were made, but among those comments were the comments about the disputed transfer. Just very briefly with respect to the first issue, the binding nature of the EEOC's determination, I just want to make sure there should be no confusion on this. Mr. America did comply with the EEOC's order to return to the status quo ante. He tendered the full amount of the settlement payment back to the agency and then filed suit, and the agency refused to accept it. He satisfied every condition that the EEOC put in its order, and that order was binding. There should have been no remaining issue on the breach claim, and the only issue remaining was on the Title VII claim. Mr. America did not seek to expand the remedies on the breach claim at all. There is certainly case law that if an employee, for example, on an underlying Title VII claim wins in the administrative process but isn't happy with the remedy and then goes to federal court and tries to expand on the remedy, then it's de novo for everybody. But that's not what happened here. The breach claim was fully, finally, and conclusively resolved in Mr. America's favor by the EEOC's decision. He complied with the conditions of that order and then returned to federal court. And there should have been no remaining issue for the district court to deal with. That was clear error, and it's sufficient to require reversal.
All right. In the summary judgment decision, the judge on page 55 says, Mr. Rosenthal also stated the defendant was a very good guy, a high-level thinker, and very bright. In response to a question as to whether Mr. Rosenthal would hire the defendant, he answered, sure, for the right position.
I think he did say that, Your Honor. He was then asked also, is he eligible for rehire? And Mr. Rosenthal said,
I don't know.
Yeah, I apologize, Your Honor. I thought that's what you were asking about. But in the summary, in the district court's findings of fact, Your Honor, and I believe that was summarizing the report in the summary judgment opinion. But in the district court's findings, I don't believe he addressed that issue. And we were not relying on that statement with respect to the breach claim now. We recognize that the district court did not find some of the statements that we asked him to find, and we are not relying on those statements. But we do believe that the statements that relate purely to the disputed transfer were sufficient.
All right. Fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brad, do you want to take a break? We don't.